It's the NFFL Podcast. Coming at you this week with two very manly men with just a shade less hair on their faces. Telling you how you can live, laugh, love, and blow the faces off of people that piss you off. Welcome back to the NFFL Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Richard Headley, joined, if you couldn't guess by the intro, by Ben. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. Feels like a completely different world since the last time I was on with you in week three. As you mentioned in the pregame warm-ups, I am beardless. And I'll tell you a little reason why. It's not the only reason why, but my beard was probably the longest it was ever been. And I was on the golf course with one of my dear golfing buddies. And we were paired up with two young Navy brats who were probably maybe 21 at best. And one of them was having a really good day on the golf course. And he was very friendly. And he asked if he could guess my age. He said that was one of his gifts as a young man. And of course, playing along, I said, of course, you could guess. Well, he told me I looked 62 years old.
Ooh.
Dead serious. And my golfing partner, I think, nearly peed himself laughing so hard. But I asked him, I said, why do you think I look 62 years old? And he said, you look like my dad. So a couple other things happened. The beard was getting really hard to maintain, and it was mainly because I'm lazy. So those two things prompted a facial hair change. So for the moment.
All right. Are you toning what's underneath, what you've now exposed to the air?
No, I'm just feeding it more sweets and Coca-Cola. So toning it by just making it more round. Getting ready for Christmas.
All right. I'm very jovial. All right. So, gentlemen of Nellis, we do have fantastic news. There are three teams that have punched their ticket to the postseason. That's right. Three teams. And I'm not sure, but this is... It's definitely not the earliest we've had anyone punch their ticket, but it feels like it's later than we've had people punch their tickets lately. We've got number one seed currently, Jim Kelly Hates Cancer, with a record of 10-1 from the Telnet Conference. And two from Sparcy, number two seed currently, Awful Waffles, with an 8-3 record. And also with an 8-3 record, my co-host for the evening, The Dude Abides. So congratulations, Ben. Yes.
Thank you. It feels good to have that locked up. Although it's really frustrating to be, I think, at least 200 points ahead in points scored. Maybe that's over Matthias, maybe a little less over Chuck, but and be stuck in third place. Chuck is, I think he's probably going to lock in the number one seed. There's a chance that could shuffle around a little bit. But that's only because he has the weakest strength of schedule. So he has not had to work very hard this year.
Yeah. You know, Scott and I were talking about that the other week, about commenting about his strength of schedule. And I think we're working on a general strength of schedule just so we can mock each other on just how easy or hard our victories have been. So we might have that coming next week.
We'll see. I look forward to it.
Well, I did hint at you before we hopped on mic that I had a question I was going to pose to you. I have heard it postulated. We've had a rash of quarterback injuries this season. And it seems like there's more than normal. And I've heard it postulated that we have just become, that the NFL has just become so overly concerned with quarterback safety that they've just gotten too soft and they're incapable of playing at the same level they have, and they're just, they're too soft, and that's why they're getting more and more injured. What do you think?
On the face, I don't think that's true. I think that I think that it's been, what, 4 or 5 years since they changed, made big changes to like the preseason schedule. Maybe a little longer than that, but I think when they really started to play around with preseason and players managing their contracts nowadays in a much different way than they used to, I think there's something to be said for, you know, preseason warm up and how that affects guys' toughness through the year. But I don't, it's not a clear line for me, that quarterbacks are soft, especially since injuries are affecting the rookies all the way up to the veterans. That's my take on it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fair. I personally, I don't think they're any softer than they have been, but I just thought it was a fun angle someone took.
But yeah, I do think even with the I do think it's a record number, but we have to be close. I saw the stat on one of the primetime games the other night of how many different starting quarterbacks. It was in the 40s, mm-hmm. At least, enough, if not more, now, after week 11. Totally lost my train of thought. Sorry about that, Brett.
Oh, no problem. You're talking about how we've reached the point where we're in the 40s of starting quarterbacks through this season. And
yeah. Sorry. Found it. But I still get frustrated over some of the flags they're throwing for roughing the passer. I think that's out of control. And I've seen, I think, a lot of disturbing trends in reffing this year that have affected every team. It's not just, for as much as I threw a tantrum when Dallas and the Eagles played on the ring and how upset I was about what I think was clearly biased reffing in Philadelphia, it's affected every team. I think the NFL has had some serious problems. So
I've seen a lot of football for a lot of teams this season live, and you're right. I mean, it's human element. You can never eliminate that without going to automated officiating, but there's some questions that need answered on a fair amount of those this season. I would agree.
I agree.
Yeah. We'll go looping back to your comments on preseason scheduling and just scheduling in general. You had some thoughts on the NFL schedule this season.
Yeah, I thought it'd be interesting to chat a little bit about it. I think that the bottom line is it feels like the NFL bet big on a couple of teams that they thought were going to do really well. One of them being the Bears. It's shocking to me how many primetime games the Bears have had, which tells me that they really thought Justin Fields was going to bring the Bears back to life and make them relevant. Mm-hmm. Green Bay, New Jersey, I can't blame them on that. We all thought we were going to get to see Aaron Rodgers light it up and play in a new team. The Vikings, I feel like they've had several, and, you know, I don't think that was a good bet to make. What are your thoughts?
I think you're right. And I think with as much as they've allowed themselves the ability to flex games with their whole flex scheduling module, I think they need to allow themselves more flexibility with it. Especially when things like, I mean, when Aaron Rodgers went down 4 plays into his tenure, every other primetime Jets game should have been an opportunity to flex out of primetime.
Correct.
Plain and simple. And I understand if it's a Monday night game, I understand that you may not have that option right now. but easy enough to flex out of a Sunday night game.
That would be, yeah. I think, it would go a long way. Is the Thursday night game? That's always been a tough slate. You know, the Thursday nights are not typically, even historically, been heavy hitters. Mm-hmm. That's hard. Flexing in and out of the Monday night game would be more challenging, but the Sunday schedule, leave it wide open. You know, Fox and CBS do the big national games late in the day anyway. You know, you're playing with a start time of 3 or 4 hours. I think fans would adjust.
They're tailgating all day anyway.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a big muscle movement.
Yeah. Most fan bases, if you got a 4 o'clock game, most fan bases are there by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning anyway.
Exactly. So, yeah. And let's just face it, the NFL makes astronomically way more money off TV rights. You know, filling stadiums with fans is just half the time the teams don't even have anything to do with it. If you look at how NFL teams, and I think it applies more to MLB, but you know, they don't necessarily see a lot of that revenue. So it would be a wash.
Yeah. I'm with you there 100%. They're schedule makers this year, and they I don't know how many times I've seen the commercial where they brag about how they used Amazon's analytics engine to predict injuries and how they came up with this perfect schedule within seconds rather than poring over it over days and weeks and months. And this is what you gave us?
Exactly. I think the other thing that's notable about it too, I think in my own mind, we had the biggest offseason change in broadcasting teams, which, to be honest with you, yes, Al Michaels, Troy Aikman, Joe Buck, like, I love watching those guys. So, yeah, but I didn't really know that they impacted viewership that much. I'm still not convinced that they were worth the amount of money that these networks paid them. But I'm sorry, Al Michaels has pulled the throttle back. I used to love – I mean, my favorite thing about Sunday night was knowing I would get to listen to Al Michaels. Mm-hmm. Help me put in a better mood for Monday. And he's not the same on Amazon. And then listening to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on Monday night, they're visibly frustrated. Like, Joe Buck has pretty been much close to saying a couple of times of like, this is, we want better games. Like, you can tell they're frustrated and they want to be calling better games. But the other part of me is like, you guys sold out. You took the money.
You guys took the money. You can only complain so money. Much. You took the bag with the big dollar signs on it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I have no disagreements with you there. Yeah. I will say, if I hear any more about Taylor Swift, it'll be too soon.
Yeah. It's, man, been such a double-edged sword where it's been funny, comedic. It's been wild to me to see the influence that situation has occurred. You know, some pop star starts making, dating a football player, and the way that has translated into all sorts of different things that we could have an entire podcast about has been mind-blowing. But at the end of the road, it's just pissed me off. It's just like it's ruined enjoyment for me in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can use some of that anger for you, and we'll talk about some trades.
Oh, bring it on.
All right. So I've got three trades that happened right around the trade deadline. Well, we'll talk about those and then we'll get your input. I think you wanted to talk about some trades that didn't quite happen. The first one.
Yes, more or less.
Yeah. Awful Waffles received Breece Hall. Meanwhile, the Dude Abides received Saquon Barkley and Jake Ferguson. Now, this is your trade, so your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, you started with a heavy hitter. This was admittedly behind the scenes, probably the toughest trade to pull off. The most obvious reason being that is Mathias. And he is notoriously the most difficult to trade with. One of the lines he threw out at me, which I think is complete bullshit, is he was sending counter offers based on Yahoo projections, and thought that was the fairest way to make a trade. We both know that he doesn't actually believe that. And that was just a PR stunt. And he's giggling and smiling with that crooked little smile he's got when he's trying to fleece people. You know, on the other side, trying to see the other side of the coin, he does negotiate very hard, which that part I respect in any trade. You know, general manager is pushing for the most for your team. But the bottom line thinking behind that trade was me and Connor were hit really hard with the Ravens Bengals game Thursday night, with Mark Andrews going down and Joe Burrow going down. So we felt moving forward that we needed to try and secure a top tight end, or as close to a top tight end as we possibly could. We ran through everyone's roster and tried to see where we could find something. And then Mathias ended up needing an upgrade at running back. So that's the mindset behind it, was that Mathias got an upgrade at running back. We got what we thought was a riskier play at running back and maybe a decent wide receiver with upside, or tight end with upside. Mm-hmm. So the unfortunate part and the rare part of that trade was me and Connor were negotiating from weakness, because everybody knew we were looking for a tight end. Yep. So everyone was taking advantage of that and offering trades, yourself included, sir, and trying. So, you know, there was a part of us that felt like we were paying a little more than we wanted to, but, you know, me and Connor had to compete really hard this year and really stay ahead of the curve, because we're playing teams on their best weeks, and we just wanted to be ready for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on the trade?
I think, I mean, the fact that you guys were able to work it out it's a solid trade. I mean, you, like you said, you got your tight end. I think it's a better trade for you, especially in the end of tight end. I think that's probably what makes it a win for you guys. Saquon is pretty much the only weapon for the Giants. And so, I mean, they're going to ride him into the ground. So you're going to get the touches week in and week out, no matter what his matchup looks like. Breece, honestly, you probably are better off not having Breece, because he's going to be Jekyll and Hyde no matter who's under center. Just game flow. So, I mean, I think the upside of Jake is there. And honestly, yeah. You mentioned us, we were going back and forth. I honestly wasn't all that keen on giving up Trey McBride. I like what I had with him. So, you know, I wasn't really looking to deal. I think Jake's probably a better fit for your guys' team than Trey was anyway. So, yeah, I like the trade.
Yeah. We went after McBride with you. We went after Schultz with Rob. We went after Kittle. I think we tried one other manager, but yeah, that's we were throwing it out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at the next one. It's between you. You're in all three of these, by the way.
Yes.
I had a couple other trades I was trying to work, but neither one went through. Jim Kelly hates cancer. This is probably the these are both bigger ones. Received from you Logan Wilson, Dalton Kincaid, and Ty Chandler. Meanwhile, you guys received Kenneth Walker III. So let's hear your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I've been really high on Kenneth Walker all year. I've had my eye on him. I have him in my Yahoo Public League. He's done very well for me. Moving into the trade deadline, I think if you look at our team, running back's been very difficult for us to maintain consistency. And we just felt like we needed to really seriously look at, you know, moving our running backs around and trying to put ourselves in position to get some consistency moving to the playoffs. I can see where some people may say that we overpaid for Walker, because I think Chuck did get three decent players all filling a unique role. But that's why you have a bench, and, you know, you can't use your bench in the playoffs. So you got to spend what you got. That was our mindset, and it was worth taking a shot at getting an upgrade. It was hard to see Walker go down, and it'll be interesting to see. But the other thing I think me and Connor did really well this year was keeping really good running back depth. So that'll lead into the next trade we talk about. But even with Walker going down, we have options, so it's not like we totally hung ourselves like we did with our tight end. That was the hardest part, was getting rid of Kincaid and then Mark Andrews going down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that one probably is in a vacuum, this one's all right. In the grand scheme of things, this one happening before that, it really hurts.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, like you said, with Kenneth Walker going down, that really hurts. Hopefully he'll be back for the postseason, and the obliques are not that bad. But I
we're hoping.
Yeah. And then the third one, you worked out a trade with Zach and managed to get his favorite running back, Jonathan Taylor, off of him and Micah Parsons off of him. And gave him Tony Pollard, Sam Howell, and an eighth rounder in return. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, in a rare stroke of generosity, the Micah Parsons was not me or Connor's idea. That was Jason, I think, trying to bridge the gap a little bit. To be honest, we've been chasing Jason Taylor all year. I think we've checked in with Zach three or four times about trying to get Jason Taylor on our roster. Both me and Connor think he can provide us the running back support we need. And as far as Pollard goes, we really liked that trade when we made it early on the season. And he just hasn't panned out. I think he's got the Zeke disease, as I've coined it, you know, where you saw it last year. Zeke was pounding the rock, getting those tough 2-3 yards. And then they would send in Pollard, and Pollard would scavenge for all the touchdowns. And that's what's exactly happened again, especially over the last 2 or 3 games, where I think Pollard's gotten down to the 1 yard line like 4 times. And they've either gone with a different play or they've sent Dowdle in. And, you know,
Dax sneaking in a couple.
Yeah, Dax sneaking in a couple, Ferguson, and there are 18 different tight ends. You know, so from a fantasy perspective, we were just like, we don't, and also just watching Dallas kind of figure out what is working for them right now. And that gunslinger mentality has really come back. And Dax earned it, man. He is playing.
He's lights out
right now. He's lights out right now. We'll see. He's, you know, after Washington this week or tomorrow, moving into Seattle and some other games, we'll see if that sticks around. But for the moment, they just want to pass. So we were like, we need to see if we can move him. So that was the idea behind that trade. Mm-hmm. We knew that Pollard was probably going to have a good game with Carolina, and he did. But, you know, that's been what we've tried to do this year, is sell high, you know, to keep managers interested. So
which is smart, yeah. Yeah, and I think, honestly, I think of the three, this is probably the one you made out the best with, because between Parsons and Taylor, those I like that combination. I really do. And Pollard, I think he's had his spike games. I really do. And it's good to see Zach get a quarterback finally on his roster. Do you know how many times I tried to get him, Russell Wilson, to at least get him a competent quarterback this season? I had three different trade offers to him over the course of like 2 weeks. Cause I just sit on my bench. I'm like, I'm not using him, dude. Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, that speaks to Jason's MO where you'll reach out to him. He'll answer you. You'll do something. And then it'll just sit there and sit there and sit there. And it'll take him weeks to do anything about it. I'm glad. I mean, Sam Howell is not a bad pickup. And I think that's the win for him.
He's good for fantasy. Yeah. That's the thing that really makes this one for him. And it's good. He'll get some nice draft capital next year. So.
And oh, by the way, everyone laughed at me when I drafted Russell Wilson in the draft, and he's been traded twice. Yeah. So, I'm kind of proud of that gut instinct I had to get him. And in the historical world of Ben Hoadley drafting and always trying to move excess quarterbacks, I find it really ironic that in the year where QB value has really dropped significantly in a lot of different ways, I've pulled off three different QB quarterback trades. So
there you go.
It's funny to me. So
all right. Well, tell me about the trades that didn't happen.
Oh man. oh Lord. I'll say this. Historically over, me and Connor have had to have a lot of conversations because one, I'm just going to let the league know, and this is, we're going to do a little intervention. Connor has an addiction problem. He's addicted to trading. He cannot help himself. Part of that is he has a beautiful gift for seeing opportunities when nobody else can. But at the end of the day, he just can't help himself. We had 90 minutes left on the trade deadline the other night, and we had just closed the deal with Matthias, and I thought we were done. And 7 minutes later, he's like, I've got another idea. And I was like, dude, you're killing me. You're killing me. But most notably was really trying hard to make a deal with Danny regarding Diggs. And Kittle, Danny, I think has a unique way of communicating with folks. And he's done this to me and Connor at least two or three times this season where he'll, act like he's ready to deal. And then in the very last second, we'll just shut it down and start talking about a completely different option. Like he'll reel us all the way in. And then let us go. And of course I get mad and then he doesn't understand why I'm mad. Really we're close a couple times. I feel like on opening the conversation for Diggs and Kittle and it just never happened. I encourage you to talk to Scott and Connor about their trade talks with each other. They have a Hatfield and McCoy situation happening.
Really?
You want to get Connor spinned up faster than you've ever seen him before. Talk to him about trading with Scott. Same with Scott talking about him trading with Connor. So I'll let you do the intel work and the journalistic aspect on that. And be interesting to hear those guys talk about it.
I think that's a fun off-season episode coming sometime.
Yes. I think me and Scott were able to maintain a good working relationship, but he was hard to trade with. And he is convinced that he has a shot at the playoffs, which I will save for later in the podcast. So.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and look at those playoff projection ideas that you have there.
What are your thoughts at this point?
Well, my thoughts are, let me bring up my window here. I mean, we've already got the first three seeds in, And we already know that Jizza and Jason are clearly not going to make it in. So that leaves us, what do we got? I'm going to say that we've got E-Town's going to make it. I'm going to say Joe makes it in. Let's see, that's a three, that's five. I think John is going to miss this year.
Oh, really?
I think John's going to miss this year. He's just been slipping. I think John's going to miss this year. And I think that Rob is going to be our fourth man out. I can see Scott squeaking in. I mean, granted, that puts me and Scott in. That puts me and Scott in. But that's also me and Scott is very quick, easy outs for whoever first and second seeds.
I think right now the standings are 9, 10, and 11, 12 with Scott, Rob, Jason, and Josh. I think those are going to be our four out. I don't see that changing. Mm-hmm. I think the more exciting conversation is how the rest of the seating falls out. To me, this has been a year of the have and have nots. You look at the top six, five teams, six teams, and the bottom six, and you look at the points per that. I think it's pretty clear, you know, that I think you're right. I think seeds 7 and 8 are going to be out pretty quick.
Whoever they are, they're getting bounced.
Yeah, I think they're getting bounced. I think the semifinals are going to be far more competitive and harder to predict. But yeah, I really don't see Scott making it. He's convinced that he's got a shot. And I was talking with him during trades. I was like, you're going to go 2-2 at best, you know, which puts you at 6 wins. And I don't know if that's going to be enough to get you in, because then you're going to go down to tiebreakers. And, you know, I think he's got to win the next three to have a shot. So
fair enough. Yeah. I will say I'm convinced that whoever is winning all this year is coming out of one of those top three seeds, period. I don't think there's a dark horse year for this.
Including Chuck? You think Chuck has a real shot at winning?
I think he's got a shot. I said out of the top three, I think he's got a shot. I'm not guaranteeing it because I don't know where he falls in those top three when it's all said and done when we get to the playoffs.
I think he's 2 wins away from locking up the number one seed, and I think he's going to win this week. Sorry to jump ahead, but I think his strength of schedule is really going to bite him. You know, he played me on a week where I had 9 players in 2 games, and that's just never a good recipe for a good fantasy weekend when you have that kind of stack. So
true.
I think he got lucky with matchups. Matthias, you know, yes, he's gotten lucky with a couple really close wins. Or at least one close win the first week of the season. But he's been very consistent. I mean, I looked through his numbers right before the podcast, and he's been consistently around 200. The last, I know he had a downslide of 2 games, but I think he's going to be tough to beat down the stretch.
I agree. Yeah. It's coming out of the top three. It's not a dark horse Cinderella year.
No.
No.
We say that now.
Yeah, it's not a it, for me, for my money's worth, it's not a Danny or Jason year for the Phyllis. It's coming out of a powerhouse.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and look back at week 11 and see if I get my I don't really have my music on here. Oh well. We'll look at week 11 games. And, you know, I decided that I'm going to let you decide what our game of the week was and what our toilet bowl game of the week was.
Oh, thank you. That is a gift.
I didn't feel like picking them. I didn't feel like picking them. All right. So, yeah, you get to pick. So we're going to start with Night Shift and Roster Guard 99. Let's see. 160-58 to 117-02. That was 43.5-point margin of victory for Night Shift. Some of the studs from this one that stuck out. Jalen Warren in his 145 total yards rushing touchdown. That included a 74-yard touchdown run. Jamin Davis, 7 total tackles and a sack. Some of the stinkers, Garrett Wilson, 2 for 9, including a fumble and a tackle. And if it wasn't for the tackle, Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver, would have gone 2 for 9 and negative points. A.J. Epinesa, only half a tackle. And Boye Mafe, 1 pass defended. He had a 7-game streak with at least 1 sack that ended. Any studs or stinkers that stuck out in this matchup for you?
As far as studs, it was great, just great to see Kyler Murray back. I've always enjoyed watching him with Arizona, so it was good to see him have a really solid game for you. That's good. I mean, 117, the entire roster being poopers. that's just hard for John. And even if Joe Burrow had been able to stay healthy, it wouldn't have added much more to the night.
Not enough.
So, and you look at his roster top to bottom and the matchups he had, you know, Garrett Wilson against Buffalo, Sutton. I don't know why managers still have Sutton on their rosters. He's just such a tough sell. Just broken a lot of hearts. Najee Harris against Cleveland. Moore against Pitt. Like, those are tough games to expect a lot of fantasy production out of that. So even prior to going in this matchup, I would not have picked John to win this. So this to me was kind of the expected outcome.
Yeah. Well, I gave the MVP to this one to Jalen Warren. Good to see a little spark plug do some good stuff. Next matchup, Awful Waffles taking on E-Town Asian, 244-66 to 208-20. That's a 46-point margin of victory for Awful Waffles. And for some studs, Brock Purdy, 333 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a perfect passer rating. It's a lot of P's in that sentence. Gus Edwards, 70 total yards and 2 touchdowns. Blake Cashman, 19 total tackles, a sack, and a pass defensed. And there weren't really any stinkers in this one. I mean, both teams went over 200 points. So
yeah,
really
you gave
not
me
anyone to complain about.
Yeah, you gave me the choice here. I'm going to give this as the game of the week tag. You know, these are two very accomplished fantasy managers. I think Josh has a really strong team. And I think anybody should be nervous playing him down the stretch. And then Matthias's score smacks of, you know, week 2 play with him where he had 248, blew up on me. And so, you know, I would be upset if I was Josh. Your team puts up 208 and you get blown out. Can't be upset with yourself about that.
No, there's nothing you can do in that face.
And always fun just to look at rosters like these and see guys perform. So always fun to see big numbers.
Oh, yes. It's always good. I gave Blake Cashman the MVP. Next up, Lance Manlove taking on San Diego 8, 155.10 to 176.15, 21.05-point margin of victory for San Diego 8, officially taking them out of contention for the Pierce. Rob and I have been texting back and forth about his avoiding the Pierce. He sent me a text with a congratulatory text with a mug of beer that both won and no Pierce. Studs for this one. Brandon Ayuk, 5 for 156 and a touchdown. Tony Pollard, 80 total yards and a touchdown. Jaden Reed, 92 total yards and a touchdown. There were some stinkers. We had Gabe Davis. He goosed. My goose is not on the soundboard, so we have no goose sound effect. Aaron Donald with a tackle and a pass defense. That was all that showed up for him. And Tyler Conklin went 2 for 18. Anyone else stand out for you?
Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Jason's offense for production and, you know, he's got 5-6 players who the highest score was 5.6 from Josh Jacobs. So I'm not good at quick math, but when you've got 6 players who combined for less than 20 points, that's going to be that's a losing effort. It's hard to overcome. So the fact that Hopkins is still getting points for him as a Tennessee wide receiver, I mean, it's just not a lot of hope on this roster. And the one piece of hope, or the two pieces of hope, were the two players I traded to him. So
you have successfully stolen all of Jason's hope.
Yeah. Oh, that's an earliest Christmas gift. Yes.
Oh, there you go. I give Brandon Ayuk the MVP for this one. Next up, we've got Sweatman's Runners taking on the 25 percenters. 157.10 to 134.76. At one point, this actually looked like a close matchup. Ends with 22.34 point margin of victory that swings in Scotty's direction. Studs, Levante David, 7 tackles, 1 sack. Antoine Winfield, 16 total tackles. And DeAndre Swift, 107 total yards and a touchdown. Stinkers, Tutu Atwell went 1 for 17. Jordan Poyer only had himself 2 tackles. And Deontay Johnson went 2 for 16. And just a fun fact, this was probably, I believe, the lowest percentage of Philadelphia players that Jizza has fielded. He only had 20% of Philadelphia players on the field. 3 Philadelphia players. They netted him 33 points.
That shows me he's learning. I'm going to go ahead and give this the toilet game of the week.
The Brown Note! Yo, McGuire!
Yeah, this is just the two of the worst teams in the league duking it out for, you know, bragging rights. I don't know what they're duking it out over. I'll agree with you. There was one point, I think maybe it was after Thursday night, where maybe I saw a glimmer of hope for Jizza to maybe pull out a winner on this one. But this game was meaningless.
Sometimes when you polish a turd, it's still a turd.
I think that's exactly what happened. So. Yep.
Well, moving on, we've got Barabunda's Nightmare taking on the Dude Abides. 170.60 to 221.28. That is a 50.68 point margin of victory for the Dude Abides, which is the whoop-ass victory of the week. Some studs. Saquon Barkley, 140 total yards and 2 touchdowns. Alex Singleton, 16 total tackles. Brian Robinson, 131 total yards, 7 receptions, and a tackle. And on the stinker side, Stephon Diggs only went 4 for 27. Riley Patterson, 3 point afters. That's it. And Jamar, and I put him on there because as a kicker, he was projected at like 9.5 points. And Ja'Marr Chase, not necessarily his fault, but 1 for 12 and a touchdown. That was all he did. It was catch a touchdown. Thoughts on your matchup?
Yeah, I was a little worried. Admittedly, I think even after the result of the Thursday night game, Yahoo still had like a 65-35 projection for the game. I was definitely concerned about the Buffalo game, you know, if Diggs was going to blow up and if see if Danny could get close. But if I'm being honest, I was never really worried about this one. I really had a good feeling that Dak Prescott was going to show up. I was surprised by Saquon Barkley's performance. So I didn't think we were going to win by this much. And defense played fairly well for us as well. So this was a fun one to watch. Really just got to sit back and enjoy it. So fun win against Danny.
All right.
And I, you know, I hope he's regretting not trading Stephon Diggs.
there you go. Danny, Ben hopes you're regretful. Oh, our MVP for the previous matchup was Antoine Winfield. MVP for this one is Saquon Barkley. And our final matchup, Gridiron Mafia taking on Jim Kelly Hates Cancer, 189.04 to 200.60, 11.56-point margin of victory for, I didn't finish filling out that one, so. Oh, man, I didn't even finish filling out my own stuff there for Jim Kelly Hates Cancer. Joe Mixon, 100 total yards and a touchdown. Tank Dell, 8 for 149 and a touchdown. And James Cook, looking good, 102 total yards and a touchdown. Some stinkers, A.J. Brown only went 1 for 8 and had a tackle. And Matt Amendola, 3 point afters. Again, another kicker projected for like 9.5 points and only got 3 point afters. Thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I was disappointed that Joe didn't win. You know, this is a decently close matchup, separated by some. I think, you know, Christian Kirk didn't really show up for Joe. Of course, you know, Chuck's defense always doing well, and providing some help there. And then the Houston wide receiver with Stroud,
Tank,
you know, Tank, really putting up some big numbers. That was hard to predict. You know, and anytime you're doing a dual, tight end threat, it's a risk. I'd had to do it 1 week. Joe did it. I think the roster check is, I think Matthias is doing it this week. So, it's an interesting play to see guys try the dual tight end threat. It's not a bad play in my mind. You know, if you really don't have a good flex and you're not quite sure which tight end is going to blow up, it's not the worst idea. So hedging bets is a good thing.
It's the Belichick play.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I didn't take the time to do our offensive and defensive players of the week because I don't have stats from Scotty this week. I think he's taking the week off for Thanksgiving, so you can express priorities. Displeasure. Yeah, he's relaxing from all that trade and fighting he did with Connor.
No, I say that, but like it was middle. It's been since the middle of the season. They refused to talk to one another. So I can't believe this hasn't come up in another podcast. But so Scotty and Connor refused to talk to one another. If I wanted something from Scotty, I had to be the one to talk to him. And they both said that to me. Both were like, we're only working with you, Ben. So.
Wow. Wow. Well, I've got a handful of poopers that I've got here. I'm not feeling terribly creative to give them nicknames. So if you If you don't want to give them nicknames, we can read them, or we can just skip on to looking ahead to week 12. I'll let you make that call.
Why don't you just give them a read?
All right. Here are some of the worst performers we have. We can name them and shame them. How's that? Matt Amendola, AJ Brown, Austin Eckler, Deontay Johnson, Jordan Poyer, Tutu Atwell, Aaron Donald, Gabe Davis and his goose, Stephon Diggs, Riley Patterson, Jamar Chase, Hollywood Brown, Boye Mafe, AJ Epinesa, Pat Freiermuth, and Garrett Wilson. Those are your poopers.
Out of that whole list, what was the biggest surprise for you?
The biggest surprise for me? Ooh.
I'm just going to go ahead and say Eckler. You don't.
Eckler probably was the biggest, yeah. I mean, even with the injury to Burrow, Jamar can have those games. So Eckler probably was my biggest surprise on the whole list. And I'm sure you've seen some of the play by now where he kind of looks like he's a fullback running in quicksand.
Yes.
Yeah. That ankle just does not look right sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just not having a good year. Not at all. So what say we look ahead at our next week? All right. We're going to start off with what I am projecting to be our toilet bowl game of the week. Where we see number 2 Awful Waffles at 8-3 take on number 12, the 25%ers at 0-11. The Yahoo super early projected outcome as of about an hour ago is that Awful Waffles is going to blow out the 25%ers by nearly 40. Awful Waffles is 1-0 against 25%ers this season and 11-3 against them overall throughout all of Nellis history. For Awful Waffles, the wide receiver takes a hit with both Nacua and Kupp dealing with injuries. Christian McCaffrey's good, but as I mentioned at some point earlier in this podcast, Breece Hall is a little concerning, especially going up against Miami. He does get Kyren back this week, and that's kind of nice against Arizona's defense. So that's my player I'm going to watch for his side. For the 25%ers, the only offensive weapons I like are DeAndre Swift and Devin Singletary. Geno's trying to come back from that elbow injury. He did come back in at the end of the game, so looks good there, but he's also going up against San Francisco. If he plays, does he play long at all? And OBJ's got his own shoulder injury he's dealing with. Leaves him less than ideal when they both take the field. Player to watch for me for this one is Eagle players. How many does he play this week? What are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I agree with you. This toilet bank game of the week, I am a little nervous for Ty. He may not make projections with some of the injury concerns that you just mentioned and some matchup concerns. We'll see what Purdy can do. He may be a nice surprise against Seattle, but I wouldn't be surprised if Matthias doesn't meet his projection of 180 just because of his matchups. The game to watch for me is the Kansas City Las Vegas game. I don't know if you watched Monday night's game, but some interesting things happening on the Chiefs offense. I know it was raining. I know it was bad weather. I tough emotional game. But I think it's systematic of some of the things that Kansas City has been dealing with. And kudos to Kansas City's defense. They've been keeping the Chiefs
afloat.
Yeah. Wow. And you can tell, I feel like every time I see a Chiefs game, you can tell Mahomes just seems so frustrated right now.
They're paying visibly like, MVS is getting like $8 million to catch nothing. He's throwing to guys who wouldn't make practice squad on a lot of other teams' rosters. He's got Kelsey, and that's it. And this year he can't perform unless his girlfriend's in the stands.
Right. Kelsey, you know, is distracted because he's flying to Argentina for his girlfriend's shows. I mean,
yeah,
you know. I love Kelsey, but I'm mad at him. But it was, you know, he struggled Monday night. And so, anyways, not to get too offbeat there, but I still think it's going to be an easy win for Mathias, even though I think both squads are going to struggle matchup-wise.
Yeah. I'm taking Awful Waffles, too.
Likewise.
Next up, number 5, Bear Boone's Nightmares at 7-4 is taking number 10, San Diego 8 at 4-7. Nice little palindrome there for this game. Super early Yahoo projected outcome, Bear Boone's Nightmare by 12. Bear Boone is 1-0 this season against San Diego 8, but only 6-10 overall. For Bear Boone, I like Diggs to rebound against Philadelphia. Robinson is going to need to continue to get his points through the air against Dallas on Thursday. I don't really see him getting them on the ground. Kittle has been surprisingly consistent lately. Historically, he's not been a blow up 1 week and keep doing it, but they found some sort of magic formula. And I like him to continue doing that against Seattle. I'm watching Pickens. They've got the new offensive coordinator tandem in Pittsburgh, so I'm curious to see what they do with him. For San Diego 8, Goff at home on Thanksgiving. I expect a good day for that. I expect that last week was his bad day at home. Ayuk's a stud. Jerome Ford saved his day with a touchdown last week. Beyond that, he was pretty much worthless to Cleveland, and they're starting DTR again. A little bit worried about going up against Denver's defense because you throw out that Miami game, and their rushing defense is actually pretty decent. Aaron Jones has already been ruled out. He really has no other running backs. I am watching Dalton Schultz on this one. Just very curious how Dalton does in his matchup. So what do you think about this one?
I think this one's going to be super close. I think Allen and Diggs are going to have another tough game against Philadelphia. I just think across the board, Danny has really tough matchups for his entire roster. I'm looking down the list of Philadelphia, Cleveland, Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Seattle, Cincinnati. And those are the opponents. Mm-hmm. Those are all tough plays for the positions that they're playing in. So I'm not going to do a caveat there. I think Rob has options for the Aaron Jones hole. I think he can figure something out. I'm betting that San Diego 8 pulls an upset this week, based on matchups, maybe a little bit of a stretch, but, I'm just not feeling good about what's happening with Buffalo right now. And I think that's going to be the Achilles heel for Danny.
I really want to make him my upset pick because historically Rob takes it to Danny. But I'm gonna lean with Danny on the other side of that close game.
Okay.
Yep. Matchup number 3, Night Shift number 7 at 5-6, taking on Gridiron Mafia number 6 at 5-6. Super early projected outcome, Gridiron Mafia by a little north of 30. Gridiron Mafia is 1-0 against Night Shift this season, but only 7-10 overall. Wide receiver has been a weakness for Night Shift, and you know, quarterback switches are a big cause behind that, so that's not going to change much. Josh Downs does look to be returning this week, so that's hopeful. Running back does look to have solidified some. Watching Trey McBride, the Rams give up points in buckets to tight end, and this offense likes to target the tight end. He's only had one game with under 7 targets since becoming their tight end 1. For Gridiron Mafia, wide receiver is pretty much set. James Cook is a little worrisome against Philadelphia. Javonte can get his points against Cleveland if Denver commits to the run. Really, that weakness was exposed last week if you watched the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game. I'm keeping my eye on Evan Engram. He's been on the downside, but he gets a soft matchup for tight ends against Houston. What do you think about this one?
Again, I think this is going to be another really tight game. I think they're under-projecting you and over-projecting Joe. You know, again, Mahomes, the Metcalf, Lockett, both wide receivers against San Francisco. Maybe someone's going to get lucky there and get a few more points depending on who wins that battle. But I see a lot more upside in your matchups. I like Montgomery against Green Bay. I actually like Addison against Chicago. Murray and McBride against the Rams and Connor. I know they don't pass the paper test, and the margin is pretty thick, at least big considering what Yahoo's projecting. But I don't think I'm willing to give you the victory there, Doctor, but this is going to be a lot closer than what Yahoo thinks it's going to be. So I'm going to give it to Joe, but
that's exactly
really
what I wrote. It's exactly right. I wrote gridiron, but it's closer than projected.
There we go.
Yeah. Next up is going to be what I'm projecting to be our game of the week. Number 4, E-Town Asian at 7-4 against number 9, Sweatman's Runners at 4-7. Yahoo super early projected outcome is that Sweatman's Runners is going to take it by a point. Now, E-Town Asian is 1-0 against Sweatman's Runners both this season and in all of Nellis history, because up until this season, they've never played each other. For E-Town Asian, defense looks pretty solid this week. I can see Myles Garrett sacking Russell Wilson a couple of times pretty easily. Jalen Waddle and Moore. Waddle and Moore. Expectations should be tempered for them. Gibbs is going to eat till he bursts. I'm keeping my eyes on Njoku. He seems to think that he's going to do a lot better after last week, but he was dropping more passes than he caught, and he was wide open on a lot of them. So I don't know. For Sweatman's Runners, Cole Kmet could really do well with the way Minnesota likes to blitz. They like to blitz like 54% of the time, I think I heard in the broadcast. If they just leak him out short, he could really do well. ETN's going to eat. Deontay is interesting, like I mentioned a couple games back with Pickens, that new offensive coordinator tandem in Pittsburgh. I really want to see what they do with him because they want him to be the number one even when they had Canada. Player to watch, how does Nico Collins look in his return? Curious to see that. What do you think about this matchup, Ben?
Yeah, this is a confusing one for me to have the projection so close. I'm not convinced that Yahoo has Sweatman and Runners in the right perspective. That being said, I do think Scott has some juicy matchups with CeeDee Lamb against Washington. Who knows what really Houston's all about, but huge upside if Collins can get open. They're really figuring out the passing game there. What is Eckler going to do against Baltimore? That's a weak spot for me. Can NTN really have a big game? I don't like Charbonnet against San Francisco, but I have similar concerns on Josh's side of the ball. Can Miami put up big points against New Jersey? I think they're going to win the game, but is it going to be a big fantasy day? I don't know. I think both teams have some great matchups and they have some real concerns, but ultimately I think this is Josh's game to lose. So I'm going to pick Josh to win over Scott. And maybe that's a little bit of an emotional pick on my part because I just don't want to see Scott win. But this is really a coin flip, and I just believe in Josh's team more.
I'm making this one my upset. I'm picking Scotty by a touchdown.
Damn.
And our Our next to last, our penultimate matchup, Jim Kelly Hates Cancer, our number one seed currently at 10-1, taking on number eight, Roster Guard 99 at 5-6. Super early projected outcome, Jim Kelly Hates Cancer by 11. They are Jim Kelly Hates Cancer 0-1 against Roster Guard 99 this season, the only team to beat him this year, but 12-14 against them overall. So losing record, period. For Jim Kelly Hates Cancer, defense is looking steadily as always. Wide receiver is loaded as long as old man Thielen is not going to nap this week. He's also got Devontae Adams, A.J. Brown, and Tank Dell. Joe Mixon at running back is solid. Ty Chandler looked pretty good last week, so I have no reason to expect that we don't see more of that this week. The only one I'm really watching and wondering about is how does Herbert fare against Baltimore?
Exactly. That was exactly what I was going to talk about. I think this is where I think the obvious one on paper would be Chuck, but man, this is a juicy matchup for Baltimore. Not only on the defensive side of the ball, but Baltimore's got this weird offense where they technically have four available running backs to include Lamar Jackson. I mean, just the way that they are running the ball I haven't seen a team like that in a while, the way they know they're running the ball. With Gus Edwards and Lamar and just, I think Baltimore is going to rip the Chargers a new one.
Yes. I don't think the Chargers will get a chance to Charger.
Yeah. I don't think this is going to be a shootout. I don't think this is where, you know, they had a crazy stat about how many 3-point losses the Chargers have had in the last 10 years or 20 years, something insane. But I don't think this is going to be this week. So I'm loving that matchup, and I think it might be enough for John to win.
Very possible for John. I am a little worried about his running back. Mostert in against the Jets, yeah, I'll probably do all right. But Najee he's hit 4 out of 10 weeks. Rashad gets a nice matchup. His defense looks pretty shaky after TJ Watt. Everyone else is just kind of But Lamar against the Chargers is pretty nice. For me, I'm watching Garrett Wilson with Tim Boyle under center. I'm curious how Tim Boyle does with more than a quarter of preparation. I'm thinking you're right. It's not anywhere near what Yahoo says. It's very easy that it could go John's way. I have a hard time picking against Chuck so far, the way the season's bounced so far, though. So I'm going to stick with Chuck on this one. Okay. Not a blowout, though, if it is.
Yeah. Which I'm noticing, this is the theme for this week. A lot of, I feel like we're both agreeing that it might be kind of a tight week in the NFFL.
Which I would love to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of this blowout. I want to see tight matchups. Yeah. I don't want to be able to sit down and do prep work on like Sunday and know exactly who's going to win.
Which I'm sure has felt like that. Yeah. At certain points of the season.
I know there are weeks where I can sit down on the late matchups on Sunday afternoon and be like, okay, four of these games are already decided. And our final matchup, the dude abides at number 3 with 8-3, taking on number 11, Lance Manlove at 3-8. Super early Yahoo projected outcome is that the dude abides is going to take this by 20. Now, the Dude Abides is 1-0 against Lance Man Love this season, but only 9-18 overall against Lance Man Love. Now, for the Dude Abides, very curious about wide receiver this week. Allen against Baltimore, Jamar Chase with a new quarterback under center, and Hill going up against the Jets. Saquon is very intriguing to me because traditional wisdom says that being the only weapon on the Giants roster, Bill Belichick will scheme to take him away. But everyone's eyeballs also say that the Patriots just don't have a football team this year. So it could go either way. But Taylor going up against Tampa Bay, I see no problem with him on the field at all. Watching Alex Singleton, very curious if he can keep that nice tackle streak alive from last week. For Lance Man Love, very weak receiver game. Gabe Davis, he's had one stud game since week 5. Nuke in a game versus a team that most teams just run on. He can lean on Pollard against Washington. Jacobs versus Kansas City, maybe. And Henry versus Carolina. The only player really to bother watching is Sack Howell, who, by the way, is very well on his way to earning that new title of most sacked quarterback in NFL history. Taking it from David Carr. So what do you think of your matchup there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the matchup on the app now. I find it interesting that Jason's right now choosing to start Minshew.
After trading.
Yeah.
He's been doing some work since this morning.
So that's throwing me off a bit. I think, honestly, I'm just going to say it. I think this is a trap game for me. I think on paper this looks good, but I think, one, maybe the history of me and Jason is messing with my head a little bit. And I just want to beat him for many other reasons than just playoff standings. And I think that this game is really going to come down to Thursday, tomorrow. I think if I can get a nice hot start off of the Dallas game against the Commanders, that's going to give me a big cushion, because I think you're right. I think Allen, I don't know what he's going to be able to do against Baltimore. And he has been playing through injuries. Every week, I feel like the moment they end their Chargers game, he's back on the injury status and they take him off. He's just a workhorse. I'm hoping that Taylor can have a good game against Tampa Bay. I think my defense, if they play well and the Dallas folks play well, I think this will be a good win for me. But this is not a guarantee. So I am going to pick myself, but I'm nervous. Thank you, Jason, for years of psychological pain.
Torment and pain. I'm picking you to win too. Yeah, but judging by the way the rest of the week pick these games, it'll probably be a close one too. Or we'll get to next week and we've been wrong and they've all been blowouts. So, but I'm hoping for a close one. Well, before we get out, we'll play Keep Trade Cut again. We'll go excellent. Thanksgiving game edition. Keep Trade Cut. We've got our three Thanksgiving games, the Packers, Lions, Commanders, Cowboys, and 49ers, Seahawks. Keep one game, trade one game away, cut one game entirely.
That's hard.
I know.
I'm excited about all three of them.
I know. Keep trade cut supposed to be hard.
I mean, I got to keep my Dallas, you know. I think it's actually, from just a fan perspective, it's probably going to be the most boring game of the day.
Yeah.
You know, I just see Dallas running away with it. Maybe not in a big win, but I think they're going to be in control the whole time. So, I think that's going to be I'm going to keep it though, just for fan's sake. And that's who I'm going to focus on tomorrow. But Detroit's so fun to watch. It's just fun, you know. It's just been a fun. I love the emotional story of Detroit and what they've been able to do and watch them play. So like, and it being on Thanksgiving, you know, they finally have a team on Thanksgiving to be happy about, pay attention to.
Yes.
So I will trade that one because it feels like cutting. Is the harsher term, a harsher one. So, but I want to watch Seattle and San Francisco, two West Coast teams, and that'll be good, but I'll cut it just because, you know, I'm mad at Scott and I'm mad that San Francisco looked up on Dallas so hard early this season. And there's a good chance Dallas is going to see San Francisco in the playoffs again, and we're going to lose again. So I'll cut that game.
All right.
I will keep Dallas, trade the Lions and cut San Francisco.
Yeah, that's about what I expected it to be for you. I would probably go a little bit different. I would keep Packers and Lions. I would probably, I'd probably cut the Cowboys just because of the three. It's probably going to be the biggest blowout. And trade the 49ers and Seahawks just on entertainment value.
There we go.
Although I'm curious to see who tries to jump in the Salvation Army kettle this year and get fined.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I think if from a purely fan perspective, that's probably the better keep, trade, cut.
Yeah.
So
everyone's different. So, gentlemen, remember you can pick up NFFL swag on Redbubble at bit.ly/NellisNFFL. I just saw today someone bought a sticker of your team logo from your Colonel Slade days. It's still up there. Someone bought a sticker of the license plate version.
So I will tell you, based upon that, I am going to keep the dude abides for the rest of the year.
Yeah?
No, I'm not going to change it.
All right. I might have to whip something up this weekend.
Yeah. So for those, do you like that movie, The Big Lebowski?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Quickly becoming my new favorite number one movie. Speaking to me these days.
So. I can see that. I can definitely see that. There are no buys this week. Everyone is playing this week. Next week's a mini buy, another Buy-mageddon. Thursday night football this week, Green Bay at Detroit, Washington at Dallas, San Francisco at Seattle, and there is Friday night football this, well, Friday night, Friday afternoon, whatever it is. Miami at New Jersey Jets. So, Ben, thank you for joining me on the mic and guest hosting with me. It's been a pleasure having you on. Anything you want to say as we sign off?
Thanks for having me, and happy holidays to you, your family, and happy holidays to the rest of you guys out there. Love you guys.
All right, gentlemen, we'll see you on the gridiron. Half of you are going to get dubs. Hope you enjoy it when you do. The NFFL Podcast is a production of Headfirst Studios. Headfirst Studios, tell your story.